On this episode of the Reflex Blue Show, Dusty Davidson and Rick Knudsen speak of their previous and current adventures in Right Mix, Flywheel, and Big Omaha. Welcome back to the Reflex Blue Show, everybody. I have with me Dusty Davidson and Rick Knudsen.
Knudsen.
Okay. And they are both Omaha people. Rick is actually a designer, and Dusty, you're actually like a developer, programmer. What is it? What do you actually call yourself when people say, like, what do you do?
Yeah, it's a really complicated question, actually. But
Rick, you're actually also a developer or something. Okay, so yeah, we'll start with Dusty. What is it?
Well, I'm a developer by trade, right? Computer science background, did software development for years, but always with kind of an eye for design and, you know, ran a software consultancy that really prided itself in being, you know, beautiful software. So I sort of straddled the fence a little bit.
And that was Brightmix?
That was Brightmix, correct.
And now is Brightmix still... Now, Brightmix, I mean, they were, for real long-time listeners of the show, Brightmix actually moved into the space of the Divi Creative people, because we had Divi on the show way back when. That was on the B Design Cast. So you guys actually moved in there. Is Brightmix still around, or does it exist?
No, we don't. That was, you know, we did the software consulting work. That would have been years ago. Yeah, back in the sort of just after the Divi Collective guys were there. And, you know, for us, that was the way, it was really the way that we got tapped into the design community in many ways, because we met John Henry and Adam and those guys as, like, just because we moved in there, and then got really clued into kind of the design and creative community as a result of that. Did some work for a handful of years, and then kind of went on to do other software-related things.
And a lot of, like, basically building your own products, which I know is kind of the goal of a lot of software firms around.
Yep, it was very much that. It was stop doing consulting work, and we built a product that we sell to restaurants, and then went on to do that for a couple of years.
So. Okay, and Rick, you actually worked with Brightmix, is that right?
Yeah, so right out of college, I interned at Brightmix as mostly a designer, did front-end development as well. So my background is actually also computer science, ironically, but I definitely lean towards creative more. And because of my computer science background, I probably focus on UI, application design, more than, you know, creative design. So at Brightmix, I was doing the UI for Triple C, which was a software company. And yeah, that was kind of my first job in college, so...
Now, if you're a designer and you're looking to work for, like, a UI place or, like, actually a programming firm, what is it that people are looking for as a designer? How would you get into that niche?
If you're a designer looking for...
Yeah.
It's funny. I don't talk to many designers that are actually in that niche, you know? For me, it was I'm interested in startups. So, and being a computer science guy, you're interested in software. In college, I was the only one that had any interest in design, so I ended up being the guy doing the UI for anything that was ever built, you know? So for me, it was just interest in software and how do you make software, you know, not only functional, but easy to use through, you know, beautiful interface, right?
Right. And then Dusty, from your perspective, what do you look for, like, when you decide, hey, we need a designer involved, and what do you actually look for coming from a computer background? I mean, have you ever hired designers before? Did you even know anything other than a couple people you'd met, or...
Yeah, no concept for hiring designers. But what we always said was that, like, we recognize great design and we recognize the value in great design, just no capacity to get from point A to point B ourselves. And so, you know, when we were looking for designers, we lucked into meeting Rick back in the day. He happened to be, again, somebody who had a great eye for design, a great talent for design, but also had this technical background that made it so that he understood software in a way that, you know, if you're an artist or pure sort of design person, maybe you don't as much. And so that was a big part of finding that. And I would say that as we would look for those types of talented people, it's people that are passionate about both sides of it, right? It's not just purely about great design. It's about making things that not only look well, but have an appreciation for the actual functionality of the software itself. So.
And where do you guys draw the line between, like, where the design ends and where the programming begins?
It's funny. We always, you know, the joke is, you know, we never wanted to make software and then hand it to a designer to make pretty.
Right.
It was always very much, how do you build a process around the user that involves, you know, the user interface first. And in many ways, you know, my preference is to design, you know, is to wireframe first and to design the user interface first in a way that then defines the functionality, right? We never were really big on writing spec documents or like, requirements or these kind of things. We always sort of said, if I'm a user and I'm going to sit down and use this software, like, what is my experience in doing that? And that's a very, in many ways, a design first process.
Yeah, and I'd say our internal process, I mean, at Brightmix and even now on the Flywheel, is always with developers and designers in the same room. So it's not a designer sitting at a computer and just designing what looks great. It's more about, you know, what is the end goal of the application functionally, and in understanding, you know, what the developer is going to have to build and how we're going to make it easy to use as well. So the developer is always there the whole way. And then what happens is me or whoever is designing would go to the computer and mock it up, but we'd always be in constant, you know.
Oh, yeah, I understand. I used to work at some places where they had the engineers, and talking to them all the time actually made things easier, because even just knowing what they can and can't do changes your mindset of how you design.
It's huge. Yep. And there's also the concept of, you know, we're looking for, when we hire developers, we look for developers that have, you know, most of them can't design, I used to joke, couldn't design their way out of a paper bag, but have an appreciation for it and an appreciation for the process, as much as we hire designers who have an appreciation for the software, and sort of finding that point in the middle and respecting both sides and the value that both sides, great software and great design, bring to the organization is really, really what we're striving for.
Well, I can speak that, you know, designers love it when a developer makes their stuff work right. And actually talking to developers, I know that any time that, you know, like when we've worked with them and stuff, they're always happy because they actually want their stuff to look good.
They just can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and when they show their stuff, it's like even though they didn't do the design, it's easier to show the functionality of it if it looks nice.
If it looks good.
Because people are just like, oh, I like the logo, and they're like, I didn't do that. But if it changes the impression of their work because the whole thing looks better, I mean, they're happy with it.
Or we used to do these things where, you know, it would not be a finished product, and it would be functionally just perfect. Like, just, it would work great, but the margins would be off, or the font was off, or the color was off, and inevitably the client would be like,
that's what they get stuck on, right?
What's going on here? And you're like, wait a minute, there's 1,000 hours of work underneath this thing. And so anytime that we could marry really great design with great functionality and then present that, and whether that was when we were doing client work when presenting that.
Okay, go ahead. So you did client work, so this, which means designers came to you and you did their coding for them. So I'm going to put you on the spot. What are the, you don't have to name names, but please do if you want. What are the things that designers should not do when sending files to like a developer? What were the pet peeves? Were there any?
Well, the biggest pet peeves are things like, the biggest pet peeves are like impossibly large, like 24-bit PNGs.
Yeah, like are you designing a poster or a website? In a way? I mean, is it going to be printed or is it alive? Right?
And it's weird. Like at the time, fonts was the big thing because there was no way to deal with fonts at the time. Like Cipher maybe, and then but images was the way, and transparency was really tough in browsers. So it was the best people that we worked with were people who understood the limitations of the web. Whether it's file size or whether it's fonts or whatever it might be, and then designed within those constraints. A lot of them would push the envelope, and we always liked that, right? Like, in many ways, those were the most interesting challenges. But, we would get things from time to time that would, like, it was impossible to slice it up in a way that not result in, like, a 7-meg transparent PNG, and, you know, that's not that exciting to, like, put in place.
Right, because you know the first comment that's going to come is, like, why does the page load
so slow? Why is it loading so slow?
You're like, well, you know, but look at how pretty it is.
Yeah, it looks great once it's loaded.
Wait a minute and a half, and then look at how pretty it is. So, that's really the thing. And that's the exact same concept as what we're talking about, is this sort of symbiotic relationship between the designer and what's possible and what, you know, what we're trying to communicate in terms of design and then what is functionally possible.
I think for the young designers listening, I think it's more important than ever to really understand what the limitations are. So you maybe not understand how to code actually, but, you know, dive into it or read online what's possible early on. So you grow into the field in a way that you can design for the web in a way that, you know, a developer doesn't look at it like...
And the limitations aren't what they were 10 years ago, but they're still
because
I still do a lot of, you know, we code most of our own stuff here, and I know there's still limitations. They slowly get better and better and better, but
fonts are better, like bandwidth is better,
yeah.
Transparency in browsers is better.
Screen size is not 640 by 480.
Screen size like matters less.
And those are probably the biggest ones back then. It's fonts, you know, transparency, probably the two biggest issues.
100%.
And now it's almost not even a problem at all. Fonts maybe a little bit if you get into like crazy custom fonts, but there's a lot of tools out there that allow you to do that even. So.
Right. Unless you're dealing with emails and then forget everything we said, you're still 10 years behind.
Yes, easily.
All right. Well, so you guys went from Brightmix to Triple Seat, which was the software, and then did you go from Triple Seat to Silicon Prairie that you started up, or does that overlap?
It kind of overlaps. So along that way, myself and Jeff Sabatsky started Silicon Prairie News, and it sort of overlaps.
And where do people go for that, is it?
SiliconPrairieNews.com.
Okay.
You know, we highlight entrepreneurs and innovators and creative types in and around the middle of the country. And really that was just, you know, we did it kind of on the side as we were running Brightmix at the time because we wanted, I would say, to find people like us, right? In many ways, we wanted to build a community of people that believed in the same things we did, you know, folks such as yourself or the other sort of creative folks around the region.
Okay, we're going to come right back. We're going to talk a little bit more about Silicon Prairie News, and we'll go from there. So when did the Silicon Prairie News website begin? Because it's been, I mean, I've been kind of following from, you know, third hand for a while.
2008 it launched, I believe, like July 2008, something like that.
And then somewhere in there, you guys are probably less known for the website and more known for your conference now, I've almost seen.
I would imagine, yeah. The conference, you know, the website has a regional draw, and the conference, Big Omaha,
Big Omaha. And that's always been done, the design for that's always been done by Oxide with a superstar designer, Drew Davies, registered trademark, Andrew Davies.
Yep. Registered trademark, yes. We partnered early on, first year with Big Omaha, with Oxide Design to put together the brand. And they come up with this sort of cow concept that really played off the heritage of the region, but also this idea of risk-taking. Because Big Omaha is about bringing innovators and entrepreneurs together.
To be fair, we're eating steaks right now because we're in Omaha. So
obviously.
I mean, we eat about 6 steaks a day around here.
That's all you eat?
Well, just in this season. When it gets more active in a few months.
Into the cow season. Cow season is better for steak. But, I mean, it's really weird. I mean, in the beginning, I absolutely didn't want to be, my joke was I didn't want to be the cow conference. Like, in no way will I be the cow conference. And now we kind of are. And people like it. If you come in from the outside, not for nothing. They do think steak. Like, they come here and they say, like, where do I get a steak? And you're like, well, over there, I guess. Like, but there's also great other things going on. And that's kind of what we hope to
showcase. Oh, but I tell you, it's 2 blocks down. Clancy's, Wednesdays, steak day. $8.99 steak lunch. It's all they serve. They close down the rest of the menu. What? It's steak day, Wednesday.
That sounds really powerful.
Did not know that.
And it'll be packed. It's amazing. It's amazing. You get a steak, you get a baked potato and a salad for lunch, $8.99.
Steak for lunch.
We're going to be there, by the way, next week.
Yeah, every week, every Wednesday. All right. So you got the Cow Conference. And now, what is it, if I say, tell me in, you know, 10, 15 seconds, what is Big Omaha? What is this conference? Because you guys, it's a smaller one. It's like, what, it maxes out at like 500 people or something?
Yeah, Big Omaha is a 600-person conference that we run every May in downtown Omaha, Nebraska. And we bring together about 14 entrepreneurs and founders from around the country from companies like Pinterest or Zappos or 37 Signals or, Mailbox, which is the founder of Mailbox in. And we bring them in to give, you know, TED-style keynotes to an audience of 600 people. And so it's a 2-day event, and really there's not a huge purpose other than just getting really kind of innovative, creative people together, and we say giving them a kick in the pants and kind of see what happens.
And you guys kind of, your big speaker the first few years, like, was it Gary Vaynerchuk or something?
Yep, we had Gary for 3 years, I think.
Okay. And you guys, the thing that amazes me is you guys don't even announce your speakers until the tickets are almost sold out.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to be able to have a following in a community that is excited about just being at Big Omaha, being in Omaha, and being a part of that event in a way that means that the speakers are less important than just the experience of being there. And so, yeah, it sells quickly, and oftentimes before we even announce speakers.
And I've heard that rather than having the conference grow bigger, you guys are actually just kind of growing out. You guys have, what is it? It's a big Kansas City.
Big Kansas City and big Des Moines now. So the three of them make up our conference series. And part of the magic of Big Omaha is that it's 500 or 600 people, and it's not South by Southwest. It's not 30 or 40,000 people. There's an intimacy and kind of a connectivity there that is really pretty special, and that's what a lot of people like. And we don't do it in a hotel ballroom, and we don't do it at the CenturyLink Center, and we do it in a venue called Kaneko, which is a kind of art gallery warehousey space, which is very conducive, I think, to interactivity and creative sort of pursuits. And so it's those are all the things that make it special. And if it was 10,000 people, I don't think you'd have that.
Yeah, and I've noticed we had John Henry on the show a couple episodes ago, and he talked about doing, like, he always does a What Cheer, whatever they're called now, pack. They do an event that kind of works during Big Omaha, kind of a game. But I've noticed you guys have, like, artists in the back of the thing. You guys have, is it like some sort of like atmosphere where you bring in people to, like, I think Adam Nielsen, who's been on the show, is like live drawing people while he was there?
Yeah, Adam this year was doing 8-bit drawings of speakers and attendees and different things live while they were speaking. We always have artists that have done installations. Scott Blake, who's a local artist, and some others. It's all part of it being, I don't like conferences. So we said, well, if we're going to run a conference, then, like, what would I want? And I would want art installations there. And I would want, free Red Bulls. And I would want, comfy chairs and all these sorts of things that we do to make it conducive to interactions between just creative people.
No, that's wonderful. And then what is the biggest thing you've learned from doing this conference? And I assume that this is going to be ongoing. This isn't like you're like 5 years done.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, people continue to show up. And I guess that's the measure of whether or not we'll continue to do it. But, I don't know. The biggest thing that I've learned is that, well, two things. One is that these people that you bring in, whether it's the founder of Pinterest, or Dennis Crowley, the founder of Foursquare, these are names that we bring in, and what you find is that they're just regular guys and gals. I mean, this is the most striking thing that you'll ever learn about them, is that, like, you hold them in very high esteem because, Mailbox just sold to Dropbox, for however many hundreds of millions of dollars or something. And here's a guy who just comes and hangs out. And by the way, he believes in the same thing we believe in. He believes in great design. He believes in great software. And he's just the nicest guy. And they just hang. And so that's probably the strongest thing. The other thing is just the community of people that keep coming back time and time again, and how powerful it is, how a great experience can really instill in people a love of a city or of a region or of or even just of, the sense of being there.
No, I think it's wonderful. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about you guys' next venture, which is Flywheel. And it's like a hosting thing or something.
Premium WordPress hosting for designers, creatives, freelancers.
Oh, well, that sounds exciting. Well, we're going to hear more about it here in just a minute.
Fantastic.
All right, so Flywheel. Now, full disclosure, I've actually had hosting elsewhere for like 10 years, so I'm not associated, so I'm not selling the service I'm using or anything. But, I'm interested in what you guys, what brought you to realize that designers might need something other than whatever they're doing with WordPress, and what is it that you guys are actually providing?
I would say that, we've talked with hundreds of designers. I mean, with Dusty's background and, myself as well, doing consulting. Dusty has a background working with creative agencies, so he's learned that way. But myself, as a designer, I freelanced for a couple of years before founding Flywheel with Dusty and Tony, who isn't here. But, you know, so I have firsthand knowledge of what it takes to kind of manage a server, right? So it's kind of the necessary evil of consulting. If you're doing any web design, you obviously have
to... Oh, yeah. I mean, I realized like a decade ago, it's like, oh, I guess I need a web server because when stuff goes wrong, I'm going to get called anyway, so I need to do it.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're doing any web design, obviously you're going to help your clients get online in some way. So as a designer, it's a necessary evil to manage kind of your hosting environment. So Flywheel is kind of our attempt to abstract the complexities away and simplify it for a crowd that isn't overly technical, but still allows them to launch and manage WordPress sites very easily for clients. So if you launch, 10, 20 sites a year for clients, how do you easily manage those? And Flywheel is kind of our attempt to see that through. So.
And what now is Flywheel launched now, or is it still in beta?
It's technically still in beta as far as the website goes. So getflywheel.com.
Okay.
Getflywheel.com. You can go and you can sign up for the beta, but we're actively signing people up, and so we're picking people off the list right now and sort of working our way through the beta list to bring people on board. So like not publicly launched, but absolutely up and running.
Correct.
Okay. So people are signing up. How many people do you have on it, or is this all confidential stuff? Is this?
Oh, we can say we've got several hundred designers that are creating and launching sites on Flywheel right now, and so we've got and we're adding more and more every day.
So if you're talking to a designer, what are like the three biggest things that you guys did that it's easier than regular hosting?
So there's a number of things. I mean, we're a premium WordPress hosting company. We said we're built.
That sounds like money. That sounds like a lot of money is what it sounds like. Premium to me sounds like $4,000.
Premium to me sounds better. It's just better.
Yeah, it's okay. Just, like, it's just
like,
better.
It's just right? Better, right? Like,
we could actually talk about how much it costs, but it's premium WordPress hosting for designers. So premium, I mean, one of the things that we do is we manage the environments. So we make sure the sites are, secure, stable, and fast. So WordPress being very standardized, we know what it takes to launch a WordPress site, so we can tune the architecture to make the site very fast. We do caching for you. We back up every site for you nightly. So we monitor for malicious attacks. WordPress obviously is very targeted by hackers because it's very popular. So every night we scan sites on Flywheel, and if they're infected because of an out-of-date plugin or something like that, we'll fix it for you for free. The other side is, it's built for designers. So what we do is try to reimagine some of the workflows of hosting to better work with creative agencies and how they work. So we do things like allow you to launch WordPress sites for free. So you can launch a site, we don't charge your credit card, you can build on top of it, demo it to your client, and when you're ready to go live, you have the option of letting your client pay for it, but you don't have to make them go to a hosting site, sign up, and then pass passwords to you, which is a horrible experience for them, right?
Right.
So we allow you to do that. We
also, because I think that conversation normally goes like the, hey, we need you to, and then they're like, what?
Right, yeah.
And that's where the conversation ends, and you're like, do you want me to? Yes.
Yeah. Well, and obviously for creative agencies or designers and creative types, the experience is obviously very important for their end user, right? So, or their customer. So part of it is how do we make the experience for their customer good when signing up for hosting? So launching a site for free and letting them just pay for it with the click of a button, as opposed to having to sign up and navigate a complicated hosting site, is one of the benefits as well. But we also do things like, allow you to work in collaborative teams. So a lot of agencies and companies we talk to, they work with remote teams, or they have multiple developers or designers on the team. So we allow you to add collaborators to a site. So everybody kind of has their own account on Flywheel, and it's very fluid, and you can invite people to collaborate on the site. They have access to the site on Flywheel and access to the files to develop on it. So if you work in a remote team, you can invite them to the site very easily. You don't have to create an account for them or pass passwords to them either. So.
Well, this sounds like this was quite the, like, you guys didn't just do this in like 3 days. This sounds like there's quite a bit involved from a design and development standpoint.
No, the really cool thing about this is that, it's not, I mean, the weird thing about hosting is you can put a server in a closet and be in a hosting company, right? And there's certainly, in the hosting world, I mean, there's probably thousands of companies that are just like that. And we've really said, as we reimagine hosting for designers, it's how do we build not only a robust hosting like infrastructure so that sites are fast and so that they're always up and so that they're secure, but how do you also build software on top of that that eases those pains of that are typically associated with hosting or with the workflow of dealing with clients and hosting. And that's a non-trivial thing. And that's where we get really excited, because we've built a very sort of nice software layer that lays on top of that that makes that, I think, very easy.
And is that handled, do you guys handle all the emails for clients and stuff too, or is that separate, or does that have to be run somewhere else?
You know, we recommend Google for email. I mean, we don't handle email currently. It's something we're looking into, because a lot of people have that problem. But right now, for all of our email clients, we say, you know, we specialize in WordPress hosting, and we're experts at that. And to be honest, Google and Google Apps are experts at email, and it's the best email experience, in our opinion, that you can get. So, you know, pay them for email and pay us for hosting, and you get sort of the best of both worlds in that way.
No, that's wonderful. Well, I mean, you guys have made a lot of progress and stuff, and it's great to see stuff like this happen in our home city of Omaha and stuff. So, both Big Omaha, Silicon Valley News, and soon to be Flywheel, as it would be. So, appreciate you guys having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And I'm really, we were discussing, I'm really upset I don't have like 4-year-old sodas to do taste tests in the fridge of or something.
Oh, we'd be down if you did. Call us down again.
We have like,
4 years from now, right?
So Kevin and I started Bright Mix. We have my partner Kevin and I started Bright Mix this year in 2007. We have a Coors Light that we put a label on it called Employee Number One. So this can of Coors Light was Employee Number One. I told Kevin, if we ever sell anything that we do or we do whatever, then like we're splitting this can of Coors Light that is, well, I
don't
know.
That's not even good when it's fresh.
No, right? No, right? Like, but yeah, Employee Number One is going to be the taste test at some point in our lives. So.
Fantastic.
That might be the last time of your life,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I don't know. 4-year-old Diamond or 4-year-old Mountain Dew can't be any better for you. I'm not convinced.
Well, you know, it does ferment a little, but Coors Light already has that process underway, so... For those listeners who know, we did that before, and it still wasn't the most pleasant, but I still think it was better than that fresh, that white Mountain Dew flavor that they made a few years ago.
Oh, what's it called?
I think I know you're talking that about. One, I think there might still be a stain on the carpet from when
like
we recorded
eight,
that
just
show.
Like ate through the carpet?
No, I think either me or Nate or Steve like took a sip and immediately spit it on the floor, and it's like... It's probably still stained the carpet of the old office.
I'm pretty sure that still exists as well. I was saying that Livewire, I don't understand how that one still exists. But.
Well, because you can't game without Livewire, can you? You can't do full night gaming sessions without.
Maybe that's it. I mean, but you got Game Fuel now. So
that is, oh, that's right.
So do you, yeah.
Is Code Red still around?
Code Red is around, yeah. Apparently I'm a Mountain Dew connoisseur.
I only drink the diet, and I drink like copious amounts.
And,
so.
And now they still don't have other flavors in
of
the diet, right?
No, if they did, I would probably try them. But, you know, I would say that the diet, you know, it tastes the same and my pants fit better, so I sort of...
Yeah, and they don't... I'm shocked that Taco Bell doesn't have the Baja Blast diet yet, even.
That's true. And Taco Bell's the only place you can get that, right?
Yeah, I think they got an exclusive. It's just... Yeah. It's, I mean, it's lime.
The Baja Blast.
Because you can't eat Mexican food without a lime drink. I think there's a law here somewhere.
That's fair.
Probably.
I don't know.
All right, well, we need further investigation on this. If anyone wants to comment, let us know. And if anybody has any, like, Diet Dew flavors and other flavors or something, also let us know, because this is top.
Oh,
this is top priority.
Important,
yeah.
Priority all right. One.
All right, Dusty, Rick, thank you guys. For everyone out there, it's goflywheel.com.
Get flywheel.
Not got flywheel. Do you have got flywheel registered yet?
Oh, man. So all customers should go to got flywheel. No, I don't know. That's a good idea, though.
We should probably register that right now.
And go flywheel.
I might register before you get back to your office, and then I'll sell it to you or something. And then it's siliconprairienews.com.
Yep.
Where you can keep up on all the stuff in the Silicon Prairie. And what is the actual geographical region of the Silicon Prairie?
I'd like to hear this.
No, we say the areas surrounding Omaha, Des Moines, and Kansas City. So, you know, we general take is if you fly out of one of those three airports, you're on the Silicon Prairie.
But you have to fly into Omaha to get to anywhere in Nebraska.
Yeah, so all of Nebraska.
Okay.
Unless Western Nebraska, they probably go to Denver. So, like, we don't count them.
Well, there is a time zone shift there.
Yeah, so
like, probably go up to the time zone.
Probably up to the time zone. And then, you know, but it's places like Lawrence, Kansas, absolutely. Lincoln, Nebraska, absolutely. Ames, Iowa, Sioux City. Like, I mean, it's basically this swath in the middle of the country that surrounds Omaha, Des Moines, and Kansas City.
Now, Ian, on the show The Office, wasn't it Ohio? Wasn't that the Silicon Prairie?
I think so. Yeah, that's when they talked about it. But they also call themselves the Midwest, so, you know, yeah, I don't do. I don't agree with
Chicago
that.
People in Chicago and Ohio consider themselves the Midwest. Ohio, I don't get it either.
I don't believe
in that.
It's
pretty far east.
Ohio's the East Coast, yeah, if you ask me.
But nobody has Mideast. That's just right. A different region.
That's a totally different thing.
All right. SiliconPrairieNews.com, getgotflywheel.com, and brightmixrip.com or something.
Yeah, just so, actually.
.irp.
.irp. Right. Yeah, all right. Absolutely.
All right, thanks, and we'll be back in a couple weeks. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Donovan.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Reflex Blue Show. For more information, visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show was created by Donovan Beery and Nate Voss. Music by Ben Luters.